What is up, ladies and gentlemen? Welcome to episode 129 of Star Wars Beneath Twin Suns, a Massive Breakdown podcast. We're coming to you on a fantastic Sunday morning, ready to talk about Grievous Intrigue and the Deserter, the next two episodes in our chronological Clone Wars watch through. These were some pretty interesting episodes. And as has been kind of the pattern recently, one of the two featurettes with Dave Filoni was extremely, extremely useful, and the other one was pretty ridiculous and not very useful, but you know, still fun to watch those things. So we're going to talk about those episodes. But first, let's get the introductions out of the way. As always, I'm your host, Mercules, joined today by Kit Kutchin. How are you doing today, Kit?
Oh, I'm doing pretty fantastic. Thank you. And yeah, I have to say, I hope if there's one new thing that longtime Star Wars fans take from these episodes, this rewatch of Clone Wars, it's that you should really go to StarWars.com and watch these featurettes. Because they are a really interesting mix of either like insightful behind the scenes peaks, or just like random thought tangents that Dave Filoni went on during the making of the episode. Mm-hmm. And either way, they're fun to watch. Like even the pointless ones are entertaining. So definitely would encourage people to look those up on StarWars.com. I only wish we got paid to say that, but we don't. They're just mm-hmm. worth your time. That's all.
Yep. Sadly, we're not officially sponsored by Star Wars in any way. If anybody at Lucasfilm is listening and wants to sponsor us, we'd be happy to accept small bribes or cash. But yeah, I was actually listening to Sky Talkers recently, and they got invited out to the Skywalker Ranch. They were actually at the Skywalker Ranch the same day that my wife and I were at the Skywalker Ranch. But we were at like the wine tasting thing, and they were like actually at the ranch getting a tour. And it's apparently because I guess they have some people who work at Skywalker Sound who like the show and listen to the show and are like, hey, would you guys like a tour of the ranch? So if there's anyone out there who works at Skywalker Sound or ILM and is like, would you guys like a tour? Yes, the answer is yes, we would love a tour.
I will fly
all the way back out to San Francisco to go on a tour of Lucasfilm or ILM or Skywalker Sound, you know, whatever's available. So.
And actually, it's great timing. This would be the perfect week for y'all to reach out, because as I understand it, Mercules is confronting aging this That's week. True. So a very happy individual life day to you. And you know, I know Lego Star Wars does birthdays, but I don't know that we've really seen birthdays celebrated in regular Star Wars. I'm curious what the birthday customs of Jedi look like now.
I don't know. I would assume that they wouldn't celebrate birthdays at all, right? As part of the Jedi way, you let go of aging. Plus, I mean, after Yoda's had his 900th birthday, you know, you got to be probably pretty tired of it. I'm somewhat tired of birthdays at 34, so it's like, you know, this week has been extremely chill. I've done nothing. I got people coming over later today to grill and just hang out and watch the Jaguars get destroyed by the Houston Texans. But, you know, besides that, it's not too much.
Hey, don't mess with Texas, man. I'm not even a fan. I'm not.
Maybe. Yeah. I think it's really just the Jaguars are terrible as a football team. As an organization, they're horrible. But, you know, I'm sure Houston won't care as long as they get the win. But
yeah.
Anyway, so that does mean that we are on a time crunch today. We got to get done with this as quickly as we possibly can. We do not actually, I technically didn't even check if we had any housekeeping. I'm going to assume that we do not have any housekeeping. And allow us to just completely bypass that process. And oh, I'm sorry, we actually do have a new member. Raul V became a member of the Patreon a couple days ago. So I didn't give you the fanfare that was deserved. I hope you can forgive us. We appreciate you greatly.
We do.
And you know, anyone who wants to support the show and does not happen to work at, you know, Lucasfilm or ILM or anything, and wants to support us, the best ways to do it are to either join the Patreon, even if it's just at a lower tier, that is totally fine. We are very, very happy to see that. If you want one of the upper tiers, we do have a bunch of really cool Beneath Twin Suns merch. But also, if you could leave us a 5-star review on either Apple Podcast or Spotify, those things also help us out pretty greatly.
Absolutely, yeah. Thank you so much, Raul, and thank you to all of our ongoing patrons and sponsors and generous friends of the show, even those who simply donate their time in Discord, hanging out and talking about Star Wars.
Mm-hmm. All right, so let's just jump into the episodes. We start with Grievous Intrigue, and I watched this episode, and I was like, "No, this is okay." I wasn't like super, super thrilled to my toenails with it. I thought it was a good, fine, classic episode. But then you watch the featurette, and Dave Filoni is like over the moon about this episode. He's talking about how it's, it's the perfect Star Wars episode. It opens with a lightsaber fight. Right. And he's just like, it's action packed from beginning to end. You've got Grievous in there. They resurrected Eeth Koth from his extended universe demise. Apparently, Eeth Koth, who is the Dathomiri Jedi from the beginning, was killed in the extended universe and apparently a gunship crash on Geonosis. And Dave Filoni was like, well, did he really die, though? So he talked to Pablo Hidalgo. Pablo Hidalgo was like, yes, he's dead. Talked to Leland Chi. Leland Chi was like, yes, he's dead. Talked to George Lucas. George Lucas was like, I don't care if you bring him back. So he brought him back. And that's how things go in the current canon. And that's why, like, people get so mad, right, about them changing the extended universe or something in The Acolyte. And we see here another, damning piece of evidence that George Lucas, quite frankly, just didn't care.
Yeah.
George Lucas didn't even care about stuff he put on screen. He would change it if he thought it better suited the story that he wanted to tell, right? So all this outrage and, oh, you're ruining George Lucas' Star Wars. That's not how George Lucas ever felt about it. George Lucas always thought if it's going to make a better story, change it. And that's fine.
Yeah. Yeah, he was all about, if you want to bring somebody back, bring him back. And that's this episode is the perfect example of that. Obviously, with Eeth Koth, someone who, I have to be honest, I didn't even know was dead. Because I didn't know he was alive in the first place prior to this episode. Mm-hmm. And frankly, I had actually forgotten this episode almost entirely, which I think made it really fun for me to watch this time. I think the big takeaway for me is that this episode does a really good job of building Grievous up as a villain. I think that's the thing that I liked the most about this is that even though he's up against, some of our main protagonists in Anakin and Obi-Wan, they still manage to make him feel really threatening, right? He takes down Eeth Koth, captures him, not knowing like all the backstory and everything. My assumption throughout much of this episode is that Eeth Koth was going to die. And so it was, it was a nice twist that he didn't die. And that's something else Dave Filoni talked about in the feature, right? He's like, all the time we introduce somebody, we make them cool, we make them interesting, and then we kill them all in the same episode. It's like, I wanted to not do that because sometimes I regret killing them off so quickly. I want to be able to use them in the future. And that's how he felt about Eeth Koth here, is he wanted to be able to use him in the future. And I don't think he did.
So he doesn't use Eeth Koth in the future. Eeth Koth does not live a happy life. He gets used, I want to say he gets used in some novelizations, or he gets used in the Darth Vader comics. And anytime someone gets used in the Darth Vader comics, it's not going to go well for them.
Yeah.
Because those Darth Vader comics are dark, dark, dark. So he's in, Grievous Intrigue and The Deserter. And then he shows up in a bunch of other episodes of Clone Wars. Like he continues to hang around all the way through, season 5, the Wrong Jedi arc and stuff like that. But then unfortunately for him, he gets used in the Darth Vader comics in 2017. And so Eeth Koth, interestingly enough, he's on the Jedi Council. And I'm sorry, I misspoke. I said he was Dathomir. He's actually a Zabrak, right?
Yeah.
Which is the actual race as opposed to the planet. So he's a Zabrak from Iridonia is the planet that he's from. He gives up his seat on the council and they replace him on the council with another Zabrak, who I believe their name is Aegon Kolar. And Aegon Kolar is actually the Zabrak who dies to Sidious in Revenge of the Sith, who goes there with Mace Windu and Kit Fisto and gets killed. So when Aegon Kolar gets promoted up into a seat, for some reason, I guess Eeth Koth had a disagreement with him. Eeth Koth leaves the Jedi Order and dismisses it entirely and goes into exile. Gets married, has a kid.
Wow.
Right? You think he's done. No, no, no. Darth Vader doesn't want any potential Jedi surviving. Darth Vader hunts him down after the Purge, murders him, and steals his kid to use for, like, Project Harvester, which is, I guess it's the beginnings of the Inquisitorius or whatever it is. So Eeth Koth surviving, Dave Filoni bringing him back, did not end up working out better for Eeth Koth. Actually, I would argue worked out significantly worse for him. Instead of just dying in a gunship, he now gets to live, fall in love, get married, have a kid, die, and have his kid kidnapped. So,
yeah, I mean, it's a dark tale. People say there's not enough darkness in Star Wars. People don't know what they're talking about.
Read the 2017 Star Wars Darth Vader comics. That's really all you need to do if you want darkness in Star Wars, because every single time we hear about some character that like survives through the Clone Wars, it's like, oh, I wonder how they died. The Darth Vader comics is how they died every single time.
Pretty much. Well, in Grievous Intrigue, Eeth Koth does not die, but we don't know that yet. Right now, Grievous is boarding Master Eeth Koth's flagship, including he brings along a bunch of commando droids with him. They battle their way through Captain Locke's clone troopers. And Eeth Koth stays behind while his men head to the escape pods and attempts to battle Grievous. And this it turns out, is a mistake. The first of many mistakes that Eeth Koth makes in his life, as it turns out. But he does his best. And he defeats several commando droids. He fights Grievous. He taunts Grievous and calls him a coward and a murderer. But Grievous is like, it's not murder to rid the galaxy of filth like the Jedi. So I appreciate we get a little bit more of the Grievous philosophy, such as it is, in this episode, because he gets a lot of back and forth with Eeth Koth and then later with Obi-Wan Kenobi. You know, they really question his point of view, and it makes it pretty clear that his point of view is killing Jedi is the only good thing in my life. Don't take it away from me.
Yeah, he explicitly says to them after he captures Eeth Koth, obviously, and he sends the nice little message to the Jedi Council where he's torturing Eeth Koth. He's like, look, he's like, I'm gonna be honest. I don't care about your politics. I don't care about the Republic. I only live to see you all die.
Yeah.
That's the only thing that he cares about. And he tortures Eeth Koth again for good measure. Now, I did appreciate the fact that, like, they make it very clear that General Grievous would not have beaten Eeth Koth on his own.
Right.
And that the only reason that he's able to do it is because he brings the Magna Guards with him. And the Magna Guards kind of surround Eeth Koth and make it very difficult for him to fight on a bunch of fronts at once. And you realize, like, Grievous doesn't care about honor.
No.
He doesn't care about this. He just wants to kill these guys.
Yeah, he's here to win. And he's far from above, you know, using any what people might consider dishonorable tactics in order to win. And it works here, right? He takes down Eeth Koth with the help of the Magna Guards. Really, the Magna Guards, in no small part, take down Eeth Koth while Grievous distracts him. Yeah, he sends this taunting, hollow message telling the Jedi Council that he's going to torture Eeth Koth for a while before he kills him, because he knows that the longer he tortures him, the more he hurts all of them. And this comes across as just like, you know, Grievous just being pure evil, just being an absolute, you know, monster. But the episode, the way the episode plays out, it reminds us that Grievous is a monster, but he's a very cunning one. And he's not doing this just purely for torture. He's got a plan here.
Yeah, I mean, I do appreciate, and I think Filoni's actually mentioned this before in a featurette, but I appreciate seeing Grievous not necessarily like outright win, but also not lose, right? There's a period of time where like Grievous just kept losing and kept losing and kept losing. And I think even Dooku makes mention of it. Like, you know, we're basically going to throw you to the Jedi. And if you succeed, good. But if you don't, then this is the price for your continued failures, right? So it's nice to see his plan actually work, him to outsmart the Jedi and then him to escape. He doesn't really do exactly what he wants, which is obviously to kill the Jedi. But he also doesn't outright lose. And we see the frustration on Kenobi's face at the tail end of the episode, you know, or I guess at the tail end of the two-part arc when he does escape. Yeah. So it is, you know, it is nice to see Grievous be good at what he's doing. And it is, you know, I think his tactical droid TV-94 actually points it out when Anakin and Adi Gallia
get to the bridge to rescue Eethkoth. Like, oh, you've played exactly into Grievous's hands. His, you know, his predictions about what you guys would do has been exactly right, which is impressive even to the tactical droid.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I love that line as well. Yeah. It's like, it's impressive even by my standards.
Mm-hmm.
The arrogance of the tactical droids in literally every time they're on screen is just always hilarious to me.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, that's what makes them fun. All right, well, where are we here? We're not quite to that point yet. So
Eethkoth is a prisoner. They notice that Eethkoth is tapping out a message in, you know, using hand signals, basically. In the video of him being tortured, he's tapping out a message, and we get to see Commander Wolf, which is Plo Koon's commander. And Wolf now has an eye injury. His eye has been replaced by a cybernetic, which, of course, is how we know Wolf going forward. But the last time we saw him, he did not have this. So this is a somewhat recent injury. This is, again, one of the things that they do where they want to show change as the war goes on.
Mm-hmm.
Either clone commanders being, you know, killed and switched out, or switching the Jedi they work with, or getting a permanent injury, or getting a new tattoo, or something like that. So it's pretty good. They notice that he's signing out the Seleukumai system. And so Obi-Wan Kenobi, Anakin, and Adi Gallia set out to rescue Grievous. The ships are under Kenobi's command. It includes the Surrogator, and three frigates and three cruisers. And they do point out in the trivia that this episode generated a bunch of new models for them to use throughout the entire rest of the series. So there's new starship models, which is a Separatist destroyer, a Republic light cruiser, and a Jedi shuttle. And then there's also a bunch of new Jedi models that they use. So they have a Weequay Jedi, whose name is Sora Bulk, a Nikto Jedi, Makis Shalas, a Runin Jedi named Halsey, a Twi'lek Jedi, Finn Erte, and a Mon Calamari Jedi, Ikar Uki, and then Tara Sanoob, who we see a couple of episodes from now. So they built five new Jedi models, a couple of Youngling models, and I think four new ship models for this episode. So a lot of hard surface budget going into this episode. But then, of course, once they're made, they get to use those models in a bunch of future episodes, and it ends up paying off.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it was definitely neat to see kind of the variety of the new characters and the new ships that they brought in and on screen here. So that is kind of another nice little visual bonus of this episode that makes it fun to watch. Mm-hmm. But something that could easily, I think, kind of slip past into the subconscious, not really being aware of what you're seeing. But yeah, so they show up, and one of the battle droids warns or alerts Grievous that ships are coming out of hyperspace. Grievous asks if they are Separatist or Republic, learns that they're Republic, and we initially think from the exchange that this is going to be a surprise to him, but then he's like, exactly as planned.
Mm-hmm.
And this is our first clue that Grievous really has predicted their response quite successfully.
It's a pretty clever plan on both their parts, actually. Like, I was both impressed with Anakin's plan, which is that Kenobi is going to distract Grievous and give them exact coordinates to Grievous's ship. And then Anakin is going to pull his ship out of hyperspace right next to Grievous's ship and kind of dock so quickly that Grievous can't notice. Well, we think that's a brilliant plan, but then Grievous points out, oh, it's Kenobi. Well, keep an eye out, because wherever Kenobi is, it's almost certain that Skywalker will be right behind him.
Yeah.
Right. And so we know that, that Grievous, as soon as he sees it's just Kenobi, we know that he is like, they've done what I expected them to, which is to split up their forces and try to attack me from multiple different angles. So he does board Obi-Wan's ship, which is the Surrogator, and they they send in the commando droids. They're really using commando droids a lot in this episode. Ton of commando droids, which are cool, because commando droids, I think, are some of the coolest and like actually most effective droids that they have. But Obi-Wan and Commander Cody are a match for these droids, basically.
Yeah. They take them down. I don't want to say necessarily too easily. The commando droids do take out a lot of clones. but they do manage to defeat them. And then Kenobi succeeds where Eethkoth failed, in that Kenobi engages the Magna Guards first and manages mm-hmm. to destroy them before fully engaging with Grievous, which gives him much better odds. I really enjoy the lightsaber battles here. I think yes. these were a ton of fun to watch, very visually engaging. Again, we get to see Grievous in sort of like prime Grievous power, being, you know, at this point more than a match for Kenobi. They're still kind of figuring out how to fight Grievous, right? This is an opponent that they've never trained to fight, that they've never come up against before. He really is one of a kind. And, you know, as long as he's able to keep them distracted enough that they can't fully utilize their force powers against him, he, in many cases, has the edge over almost any of the Jedi that he's likely to encounter. You know, it's to Grievous's benefit, he never comes up against Yoda, but I think he knows to steer clear of certain individuals on the council. You know, cough, cough, Yoda, Mace, and pretty much as long as he avoids a few of those individuals, he's got good odds of coming out alive and victorious against any of the given Jedi. I think he likes Kenobi because Kenobi's just enough of a challenge. Kenobi's like the peak of Grievous's ability to kill.
Mm-hmm.
He's kind of the one that got away for Grievous.
Yeah. They have a good back and forth too during the duel, right? Like Kenobi, you know, mocks Grievous quite a bit and kind of destabilizes him with some of his remarks. He says, What do you gain besides a mutilated body and your place as Dooku's errand boy? And Grievous is upset by that. And he's like, I'm not an errand boy. I don't care for the politics. I'm the leader of the most powerful droid army the galaxy's ever seen. And Obi-Wan's like, who cares? Your army has no loyalty. They have no spirit. Like, they're functionally just droids. And Grievous says, I don't care. I hope to gain a future where there are no more Jedi.
Yeah.
That's pretty much all he wants, which is a future that he, you know, doesn't survive to see, unfortunately, but that future does come to pass. So Obi-Wan then finally realizes he can use the force against Grievous and like throws him into the window. I thought he was almost going to shatter the window and suck everyone out into space. But, you know, Grievous does his little crab walk thing and manages to escape, which is always when he's retreating, how he manages to do it the quickest.
Yeah. No, I feel like he's like had one of his like droid assistant back at his base program a macro, and where if he's in a panic, he can just trigger it and it just like his body just crawls him out of there as fast as possible.
Right.
Yeah, he scoots off and meanwhile on we kind of need to catch up here with Anakin. So Anakin, I enjoyed the back and forth between Anakin and Adi Gallia in their little ship with Rex and the troopers, where Adi asks how close he is planning to jump in. And he's like, pretty close. And they do, in fact, jump in extremely close to Grievous' ship, you know, very nearly straight into it. And then I enjoyed the perspective shift here as they dock the ship to where they're upside down on the screen, kind of acknowledging the artificial gravity that they're using, and acknowledging that even though Star Wars space battles almost always take place on a flat plane, you know, there is no up or down in space. And like, we can sort of imagine that maybe there's a little more three-dimensional fighting going on, and that's just how it's shown to us. Because it sort of makes sense to our brains to think about things happening on a flat plane, because that's more or less how we live. But so I kind of appreciated that whole scene, them getting into the ship. The back and forth between Kenobi and Grievous was entertaining. It does sort of reveal the shallowness of Grievous's motivation. And we've got, let's see, I think we've sort of skipped ahead here. While they're battling, Anakin, Adi Gallia, head into Grievous' ship, leaving Rex and the clone troopers to guard their exit. And this is where they confront the tactical droid, TV-94. Even gets a name or a designation, I guess. It has Koth captured in the containment field, and it reveals that it was expecting them as a bunch of commando droids pop up from hiding places all around the bridge, wielding vibro blades and blasters. And the tactical droid electrocutes Eeth Koth and warns the Jedi that if they take another step, that it will kill Eeth Koth. However, Anakin isn't having it, and force pulls the droid close to him and cuts off the arm with the control for the containment field. And then we get kind of a fun fight scene. There, I feel like it's a bit of levity here as the tactical droid is crawling around after its arm while they are dismantling the commando droids. And sort of the arm kind of keeps getting kicked or force pulled around the room. The tactical droid continues to crawl after it until ultimately all of the droids are defeated. And we get a great little death for TV-94 that finally retrieves its arm, holds it up in its one remaining arm, and sort of like mocks them and then realizes it doesn't have a hand to push the button with.
Yeah.
Because the control was something that was like added on. It wasn't inherent to the droid. And so it has to be able to push a button to trigger the electroshock. So they save Eeth Koth once again, subverting the sort of the expectation that Eeth Koth, having been introduced and captured, would then die. And yeah, that sort of catches us up, right? This catches us up with where Obi-Wan force pushes Grievous into the window, cracking it. Grievous escapes. And then we get another... They do a bunch of things in these episodes to sort of subtly manipulate events so that Anakin and Grievous don't meet, because they can't meet, because there are lines indicating that the first time they meet is in the movies, which happen after this.
Right.
And so they have to make sure that they never meet. And so Anakin graciously volunteers to be the one who takes Eeth Koth to the shuttle to help him get to safety, while Adigalia goes after Grievous, which feels a bit out of character for Anakin.
But it works for the purposes.
But it works for the purposes of what they have to do.
So Adigalia is interesting in that she is prevalent in a lot of Clone Wars stuff. She's in a whole ton of episodes. She does not make it through the Clone Wars. She doesn't actually even make it to Revenge of the Sith. She actually gets killed by Savage Opress when Dooku tries to use him as a new apprentice. Savage and Maul duel, you know, Obi-Wan and Adigalia, and Savage actually kills Adigalia, which I had forgotten about. And I'm very much looking forward to those episodes again. I think those are in season 4, because those are phenomenal episodes.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that's actually how she ends up dying. But she is an accomplished Jedi. You know, she's on the council and very intelligent, decent fighter. And she manages to, you know, do pretty well against Grievous. But unfortunately for all of them, Grievous has decided that the best way to avoid this situation is simply to blow up Obi-Wan's ship while it's still attached to his destroyer.
Yeah.
So he orders his droids to fire on the engines. I actually felt bad for the clone pilots of Obi-Wan's ship. Like, they, you know, do their duty and they hang in there because they know if they break away, right, it will sever the connection and will suck everyone out into space. So they hang in there, but their ship gets destroyed and kind of folds up, and it like bends the tube that they're trying to crawl through and fight on. And so Adigalia has to make the choice to save Obi-Wan and Commander Cody or continue to pursue Grievous. So she throws a line down the now vertical tube that allows Obi-Wan and Cody to kind of climb up to them. And that gives Grievous time to make it to an escape pod, where he tosses another poor helpless droid out of the way. To make room for himself so that he can get out of the ship.
Yeah, I have to say, this again is another really cool action scene where they're shifting the camera perspective. It really is, I think, bringing a cinematic feel to the fight scenes. You know, we've got Obi-Wan and Grievous dueling at an angle, Grievous and Adigalia dueling kind of at an angle on screen as air is being sucked past them. And it's visually a ton of fun to watch. I really, really enjoyed the fight scenes in this episode. I just thought they were really creative and well put together and kind of did some things that we don't see that often in the Clone Wars.
All right. So they, so Grievous makes it to an escape pod. They kind of jettison out. Unfortunately, they're hit by some debris that's falling off the destroyed ship. And so they crash land. Obi-Wan decides that him and Rex and Cody will go down to Sulukumai and look for Grievous while Anakin cleans up the space battle. That way Anakin doesn't see Grievous yet again.
Yeah.
So Anakin's going to clean up the space battle. Obi-Wan's going to go down to the hangar. Eeth Koth kind of not necessarily grateful. He never actually says thank you. He says, "You took a great risk splitting your forces up to try to save me." He says, "I would have absolutely given my life in order for Grievous to have been captured." It's like, well, Eeth, you should be happy because you originally did give your life and Grievous wasn't captured. So really, you should be thankful.
That was in a galaxy far, far away, universe, you know, 612. This is Star Wars 616. So he doesn't know about that other version of himself that died. But yeah, it is interesting that he's not the most grateful. Maybe it's one of those Jedi things where it's just like the as the Force wills it.
Mm-hmm.
They don't seem too bothered. But yeah, it is, again, it's fun. I do feel like Obi-Wan telling Anakin to clean up the space battle while he goes after Grievous is actually kind of in character, because Obi-Wan, Grievous is a bit of a personal mission for him, just as much as he's a personal mission for Grievous, right? There's a bit of a rivalry that builds between the two of them over time. And I think there is a lot of frustration for Obi-Wan that he can't quite get the job done, right? He had Grievous and then Grievous escaped. And so he wants to finish that. And I think Obi-Wan maybe conveys this to Anakin that, like, he's going to be in charge of hunting Grievous.
Mm-hmm.
And there's not going to be any argument, you know. Anakin argues with Obi-Wan all the time, but then sometimes he doesn't. And I think he kind of knows when Obi-Wan is not in a joking mood. And this is maybe one of those times.
Mm-hmm.
So this makes a little more sense to me than Anakin letting Adigalia be the one to go after Grievous. But anyways, you know, they live to fight another day, as Anakin says. Koth goes to a medical frigate, and Obi-Wan prepares for the search on Sulukumai. And that brings us to the end of Grievous Intrigue.
It's a pretty good episode. I wouldn't say it's one of my favorites. I understand why Dave Filoni likes it a lot, because the it's action-packed. You know, there's space battles, there's lightsaber battles, there's a bunch of different Jedi in it, there's, you know, new things we haven't seen before. Like, it's a very good Star Wars episode. But so much of what I love about Clone Wars is when it does something different from, you know, normal Star Wars. I feel like this episode is like the introduction to Revenge of the Sith, the movie, as an episode, right? And I enjoyed it. I thought it was quite fun. But at the same time, it kind of blends in for me with a lot of the other Star Wars-y type stuff. Like, there's nothing that, like, stands out in this episode for me as, like, yeah, that's why I watch Clone Wars, you know? So for me, I mean, I guess I give it an 8, like a flat 8 is to me, I think, about where it sits.
So I've been torn between a 7.5 and an 8. And I feel like as much as this episode is fun to watch, and it does do some really visually interesting things, it is action-packed. You know, it goes by really quick. Nonetheless, it's not it's not super memorable. And there are sort of some fairly overt things that they have to do in order to keep Anakin and Grievous separate that did take me out of it a little bit. You know, it did feel a bit contrived that they were sort of going out of their way to keep Anakin and Grievous apart. It didn't feel like it happened organically. It felt like intentional steps were taken by the writers to keep them separate. And so I think I'm going to actually rate it a little lower and give it a 7.5, you know, which to me is a rating that says this is a solid episode. It was fun to watch. I liked it. But there's nothing about it that blows me away. And it does have some flaws, mm-hmm. and some weaker points. And it doesn't necessarily stand out. Like you said, it doesn't stand out against the backdrop of all of these other episodes.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think a 7.5 is totally fine. I could have definitely done it. I feel like I've been being generous with the episodes in season two, just based off how much I've been enjoying like the watch through as a whole. And it's been like skewing my ratings like 0.5 higher. But yeah, I think 7.5 is fair. Now we move on to The Deserter, which is the follow-up to Grievous Intrigue. It is literally part two of this episode, but it focuses on a much different part of the story. So Obi-Wan Kenobi and Cody and Rex land on Sulukumai, and Grievous has had to abandon his landing ship because of the damage that it took from the debris that it ran into. So he fled in an escape pod, as did many of the droids, but the escape pods pretty much just fired off all over the place. And so none of them have landed grouped up. The radio transmitter on Grievous's pod has been knocked out of commission. So in order for him to call for backup and for an evacuation, he needs to go find one of the other pods. And that's kind of Grievous's story this entire time, is like him trying to get to the other escape pod so that he can call in for backup. He can call to be evacuated. Kenobi, on the other hand, doesn't want to go split up and hunt down all the different escape pods because they're not sure which one Grievous is in. So he figures they'll start at the wreckage of the crash landing ship first, and then try to pick up clues and go from there. This part of the story is like the less interesting part of the story to me in this episode. I really enjoyed the cut deserter part of the story.
Yeah.
And less enjoyed the like pursuit of Grievous part of the story. And I think that's because like one of the things that I find the most interesting in Clone Wars, and I really found interesting in Bad Batch, is like I like the moral dilemma of the clones. And they poke at it kind of early in the Clone Wars. Every once in a while, you know, one or two episodes a season, they'll poke at like a clone doing something unexpected. And I really liked all those breadcrumbs that they dropped in the early seasons. And this one is no exception. I very much enjoy Cut's story. He does come back, you know, later on. There's an episode much later in the series called Cut and Run, where he shows back up. And of course we get the story with Fives and the inhibitor chips. We get a couple of different clones that betray the Republic, right? So I always like these stories where there's a clone that is choosing to do something different.
Yeah.
Where they actually like kind of address the moral quandary that is using cloned, you know, beings to build an army, right? So I really enjoyed that part of it. And the Grievous stuff, I was kind of like, nah, I can take it or leave it, you know?
Yeah, I felt pretty similarly, I think. The Grievous arc in this episode is ultimately a bit predictable. And it's just sort of, it's about how they get there. And I feel like that part of the episode is really for kids. Like, my daughter really enjoys the comedy bits with the battle droids running out of power as they go, and there's just this trail of powered down battle droids leading to Grievous, like a breadcrumb trail. And we do get some more lightsaber combat. But it is all a bit predictable because we know Grievous escapes. And so they don't really manage to set stakes that are super engaging for that side of things. And ultimately, how it all plays out just isn't that interesting. It's kind of window dressing, like, all right, well, Grievous has to escape. We've set this up. We have to play it out. And meanwhile, the much more interesting story is with Cut and Rex and what decision Rex will make. Because while I think as viewers, we have an intuition that Rex isn't going to turn Cut in, it is hard to see how he gets there at the outset, right? Because Rex's attitude toward deserters, as has been set up in season one, is definitely a negative one. And we've been given a very negative outlook toward any clone who turns, you know, against their programming, against their oath, you know, whatever you want to attribute their loyalty to, some combination thereof. And Cut is now taking, you know, that setup that's been used a couple of times in season one, and it's turning it on its head and saying, well, what if leaving the clone army is actually the right thing to do? What if, you know, we suddenly turn that deserter into a sympathetic character? Then how do you respond? And I think that's the much more interesting moral question. And it also is a great character building opportunity for Rex, right? Like, Cut really, really challenges him. We get a bunch of scenes that are just them talking and Cut saying, well, you know, what about this? What about that? You know, do you really have a choice? You know, you're fighting for a future that you're not going to be able to take part in. Because yeah, it's against regulation. It's against your programming. He really pokes at Rex and forces Rex to actually articulate, why is it that you stay loyal? Why is it that you stay in the army till the end? And I think Rex does come to his own conclusion about, you know, what's valuable to him. So it really builds Rex as a character for me in a big way. I love mm-hmm. half of this episode is like fantastic, I think.
I would say that yeah, I agree with that. I also like the timeline. I mean, we'll talk about it a little bit later when Cut actually shows up, because he hasn't technically shown up in the episode yet. But I like the timeline that they give for this too, although it doesn't really necessarily make sense with Sue and the kids. But we'll talk about that in a little bit. So the moral of the story is they aren't finding what they need at the wreckage of Grievous's landing craft, so they decide to split up just a little bit. So Cody, Cries, and Kenobi. And Cries is interesting. Cries is the clone trooper with the blonde hair, like the grown out blonde hair. That looks different than like any other clone trooper we've ever seen, are going to go one direction. And then Rex is going to take Jesse Hardcase and Kicks and go in another direction. While Rex is, you know, riding on a speeder bike, he actually gets shot right in the chest by a couple of commando droids that are set up like snipers. And this actually reminds me, because this isn't the trivia thing. So the very funny thing about this episode is the person who directed this episode of an animated TV show was the director of Jurassic Park 3 and Jumanji. So a very, very odd change of pace for this director to do Jumanji, Jurassic Park 3, and then do this, which is kind of funny. Apparently this was his first animated episode that he'd ever done. But yeah, they shoot Rex, and obviously, you know, you're like, wow, I can't believe Rex was the one that got shot. But I guess they needed that, because they needed Rex to be the one who like stays at the homestead and has the discussion with Cut and everything, right? Like that. So,
well, and it is, you know, at this point in the Clone Wars, is Rex? I don't think Rex's survival is guaranteed by anything at this point mm-hmm. in release. We don't see any evidence of him in the movies. There's no, essentially, like, just zero guarantee that he lives. So when they air this episode and he gets shot, like, the stakes are real. For us, going back mm-hmm. on the rewatch, we know how his story plays out. But it was a big move for them to shoot him here in the actual release order of these episodes. And the tension the first time through, when you don't know how things play out for Rex, is very real. I don't think it lasts, but that's okay, because the rest of the episode and the reason for him staying behind is, you know, to take part in the story with Cut is so good that it doesn't even bother me at all.
Well, one of the funny things is that when he gets shot, obviously Kix is the medic, and Kix is attending to him. Kix has a tattoo on the side of his head, an Ouroboros, and it's a good droid is a dead one.
Yeah.
Is what it says in Ouroboros on the side of his head, which is pretty funny. These are some very unique clone models. Like Jesse is obviously known because he has the Republic Cog tattooed on his face. Kix, you know, has the very distinctive tattoo on the side of his head and like the lightning bolts shaved into his hair. And then Kryze and Cody and Rex, like these are some of the most noticeable clones that we get all together in the same episode. So Rex gets shot in the chest. They know his injuries are severe, but they can't know more without removing his armor, and they don't want to remove his armor just out in the middle of the wetlands. So they do notice that there's some Eopies around, and they're like, oh, well, these are domesticated creatures, right? So if these are domesticated, that means we've got to be on a farm. So where there's a farm, there's a, you know, a farmhouse and a farmer. So let's go find them. And they do manage to find the farm, and the Twi'lek woman who greets them is not excited to see them. This is Sue, and she's got a blaster rifle, and they're like, oh, hey, we just, you know, we have an injured trooper. We just need to, you know, bring them in. She's like, I'm not a doctor, you know, carry on your way, basically.
Yeah.
And he's like, no, we just need a place to put him. So she says, you know what? We've got a farm out back with some benches in it. That's the best I can do for you. You can have that.
Yeah, no, she definitely makes a strong effort to get rid of them. But ultimately, you know, they're able to win her sympathy. And we also do get a quick look at the kids here. As you know, they kind of peek out to see what's going on, but she orders them back inside. You know, and says, yeah, you know, my husband's away right now. But yeah, you can use the benches in the barn. We also kind of skip over here. There is a scene back at the first crash site. Clone Trooper finds an intact droid, and they load it onto one of the ATTEs for inspection as they continue to track or to hunt for Grievous. Analyzing the droid, they are sort of able to figure out what happened to its pod. Apparently, it changed course to avoid running into another pod and then ultimately crash landed. And based on the data from the droid, they're able to calculate. Kryze, I think, actually is the one who's able to calculate the location of the other pod, or at least get them within a couple of clicks of it. And, you know, so Kenobi has Cody tell them in, we've picked up Grievous's scent. And so they kind of are continuing their hunt now with a lead. Meanwhile, back at the farm, night falls and Rex comes to with Kix bandaging his wound. He is filled in on what happens. And apparently he can't feel his left arm, which is super concerning. Kix is like, yeah, you've got some nerve damage. And Rex is like, oh, all right, then. He's just not worried about it. He's like, that's fine. Patch me up. Let's just get back on patrol. I don't need that arm. And Kix is like, excuse me, no. You know, I'm the medic when it comes to the health of the men. I outrank everyone, including you, sir. And so he orders Rex to stay behind and get some rest. But the rest of them are going to go ahead and finish the patrol.
I did appreciate that line from Kix, though.
Yeah.
Unfortunately for you, I outrank everyone, including you, sir.
Yeah. He does kind of put Rex in his place here. You gotta love a good doctor line thrown in there. Sue interrupts them bringing some food. And she asks if they need anything else, but Jesse says, oh, no, the food's more than enough. And suddenly a ball comes flying into the barn. And before Sue can stop her, the little girl, Shea?
Yeah, I believe that's how it's pronounced.
Forgetting the pronunciation of the kids' names here. Comes running in and she's like, oh, you know, I couldn't help it. It, you know, the toy got away from me. As toys do when a kid wants to go somewhere they're not supposed to be. So, you know, I feel like though this is a good use of a kid doing something dumb. It's like it's clearly intentional, and it does actually move the plot along in a way that feels natural. Kids are curious,
mm-hmm.
And you know, given an opportunity, they're going to go somewhere that they're not supposed to go just to have a look. So she sees Rex's face and she gives him just this weird look. And if you haven't seen the episode before, you don't immediately know what's going on. You have, of course, you know exactly what's going on. But she says, oh, you look like my dad. The clones are like, what? That's a weird thing to say.
Yep.
And Sue's like, oh, you know, don't bother them. The clones don't really read into it. And so, you know, they leave. Rex orders the men to resume the search without him, puts Jesse in charge. And Hardcase grabs one of Rex's blasters and leaves it on the bench next to him, just so he's not unarmed. Rex does his best to get some sleep. Meanwhile, Kenobi and Cody and the rest of the troopers locate another separatist escape pod, but find no one there. And they deduce that Grievous must therefore be looking for one of the other pods that crashed. Kenobi attempts to contact Rex and gets Jesse instead, who informs him that Rex has been injured. They found him shelter for the night. And Kenobi says, you know, gives him some orders basically to swing around and meet up. And they'll all sort of converge on the final escape pod, which is where Grievous must be. And yeah, things kind of move along or moving along there. But now we get into the good stuff. This is the part of the episode where I feel like the real meat of the episode is. So Rex is briefly woken up by one of the Eopis licking his face. And not too long afterwards, we get a mysterious stranger entering the barn by a side door, grabbing some kind of farming implement, which really looks much more like a weapon. I don't know what you would use this tool for.
Yeah.
But anyways, he grabs it, advances across the room, pointing it toward Rex. You know, Rex sort of inches his hand down to his pistol and sort of at the last moment pulls the gun and points it at the stranger, who disarms him using this tool. And holds Rex sort of at the point of a blade. Turns out that the man is another clone. And when the man sees that Rex is also a clone, you wonder for a moment if he's going to try to kill him. Like, I feel like there's a moment where he considers, and then he doesn't. He turns on a light and comments that the Clone Wars have finally made it to Seleucami. Rex is pretty pissed. He's like, you're a deserter. And the guy's like, no, I'm just a simple farmer. No, my name's Cut LaQuane. What's your identification number?
Well, so Rex asks him for his identification number first.
Oh, yeah, that's true. That's
Cut's
true.
Like, I don't have that. I have a name. And then he turns back around. He says, what's your identification number to Rex? And right, Rex is right. Like, I have a name, too. He's like, oh, so you do have a name. Right. And yeah, I mean, he's like, it's not, you know, desertion. He's like, I just didn't want to kill for a living anymore. And Rex says, well, that's not your choice to make. You swore an oath to the Galactic Republic. He says, I swore an oath to my family. And, you know, he's like, that's what I'm here to do, is protect them. He's like, do you plan to turn me in? But before Rex can answer, you know, Sue and the kids show up. And obviously the kids are doing the thing that they need to do for the purpose of the story, which is talk about how much they love their dad. And, you know, Jack drew a nice little picture for Cut and everything like that. And, you know, Shea's like, oh, I told this nice man that he looks just like you, Dad, and stuff like that. And, you know, Sue kind of fills Cut in on why Rex is there. And they invite Rex to dinner. And Rex is like, nah, I don't really want to do this. But the little children very much want what I guess they consider immediately like their uncle, because it looks just like their dad,
yeah,
to come to dinner. And Cut's like, look, you know, they're not going to stop begging until you say yes. And this is where we get a good little bit of the back and forth between the two of them, right? So over the dinner conversation, you know, Rex and Cud are kind of pushing each other on their decision making and why they've done these things.
Yeah.
And Cud's like, look, you know, clones are individuals. It's why you have a name instead of a number. And he's like asking, he's like, why do you have a name? And he's like, oh, maybe they thought it was a more efficient way of distinguishing us. And he's like, really? You think a name is more efficient than a number? Like, that's not the reason why you have a name.
Yeah.
And there's like a very, very good back and forth about like Cut basically saying to Rex, are you in the army because that's what you want? Or are you in the army because that's what you know? Because he's like, I made the decision to leave because of what I want as an individual, not because of what I was told to do as a clone. And Rex is like, well, maybe I'm here because I want to be here. And Cut's like, that's totally fine. You can be there if that's what you want to be. But you shouldn't judge people who don't want to be, or shouldn't judge clones who don't want that.
Yeah. Yeah, I really kind of appreciate how this plays out, because it feels like a natural conflict point between the two of them, and the way that they both approach it feels very genuine. You know, Cut suggests to Rex that, you know, just by being here and seeing the life that Cut has built for himself, he must be considering, you know, what his life could be like if he chose something different, right? He's got it's being put in his face. And, you know, Rex is like, well, you know, maybe by staying in the army, I am doing that, because I can't imagine what kind of evil might befall the galaxy if the Republic lost this war. You know, and, you know, that is when he's like, you know, does that meet with your approval? And Cut's like, of course, each their own. That's what I always say.
Yeah.
He manages to turn it right around on Rex again. And then we do get, again, another nice use of kids in the script here. Shay is like, what does that mean? You know, asking here about the phrase to each their own, which gives Cut an opportunity to answer her and also subtly take a yet another jibe at Rex. Says that means that you can do whatever you want with your life. And it feels like a very pointed comment, right? And I think, you know, based on the animation here, it feels like Rex kind of takes it that way as well. And, you know, he wants to be mad at Cut, but I think he knows he's losing this argument.
There's also a good thing where Cut's like, look, you know, he's like, I exist to protect my children. And Rex is like, well, and Cut says to him, like, you can't know what that's like. Like, you're protecting the galaxy from evil, but I'm protecting my children. And Rex is like, well, by protecting the galaxy from evil, I'm protecting other people's children. And it's the same thing. And Cut's like, I mean, sure, maybe. If, like, that's, you know, if that's how you want to think about it, then yes, it is. But they, you know, the back and forth here is delightful, because, again, it reinforces that clones are individuals.
Right.
That some clones have different perspectives on all this stuff. And yeah, like this is my favorite part of like these two episodes, is the conversation that they've got. And Rex is like growing understanding that it's okay for some clones to choose something different. And then we swap back, unfortunately, to the rest of the Grievous stuff. You know, Grievous reaches the last intact capsule, prepares to send a distress call. One of the droids says, hey, you know, there are life forms approaching us from the east and the west. And Grievous has his droids kind of prepare for battle. You know, Kenobi and his men catch up. Jesse and Hardcase and Kix are coming from the other side. The Separatist shuttle arrives, and conveniently, the ATTE's gun overheats. And so one of the ATTEs gets blown up initially,
right,
by a droid with a rocket launcher. The other one's gun overheats. And Kenobi even says, like, this is a very convenient plot device for them not to be able to shoot down the shuttle. But Kenobi's like, it's always something, right?
Yeah.
And and clever Grievous manages to escape by attaching himself to the shuttle with a grappling hook instead of having the shuttle actually try to land, because every time the shuttle tries to land, it gets driven away by small arms fire, right? So clever Grievous managing to escape that way.
Yeah. And it is kind of a nice last shot of him being hauled away by the shuttle. You know, he connects and he says, fire the engines. And they actually, for once, they immediately follow orders correctly, and they fire the engines, taking off, and he's hauled away on this line, swinging one of his lightsabers, deflects a blaster bolt. So it's a cool last shot, I'll give him that. And then we've got Kenobi who was pursuing Grievous, looking extremely frustrated and disappointed, commenting to Cody that we're right back where we started. And that's, you know, that is very true. You know, the chase, the hunt for Grievous kind of resets here. Part of me almost wondered, like, does this somehow lead into, like, Lair of Grievous? But no. No connection.
Anyways, we get back to the good part of the story, which is Rex and Cut playing Dejarik, which, of course, is the, like, chess-esque game that we see in the very first Star Wars and we see again in The Force Awakens. And this was what the entire featurette was about, this little one scene where Dave Filoni was like insistent that even though this is CGI, they make the characters move in like the herky jerky way that the stop motion animated characters done by Phil Tippett moved in the original Star Wars. And he was like, I knew that George was going to see it and be like, no, we have better technology. Why don't you animate them smoothly? But he's like, that's just not how it was from our perspective as a fan. He's like, when you see the characters move like that as a fan, you think, oh, that's the way the game must be played. Like, that's the way those little holograms work.
Right.
And so he's like, we wanted to make the holograms work the same way they did in the original Star Wars, even though George is like, why don't you just use modern animation and make it look better? And he's like, because as fans, we don't want it to look better. We want it to look the way it looked the first time we saw it.
Right.
Because that's what we're connected to, which I thought was a very interesting perspective on a very silly scene.
It is very... Yeah, it's kind of a like the silliest detail in this entire episode to focus on is that they had the script called for them to be playing a game, but it didn't necessarily specify what game. And there were, of course, a bunch of different games in the Star Wars universe that they could have picked. But they decided it was going to be the Jurek. And honestly, I kind of like that Filoni was obsessing over this little detail. I really enjoyed. One of the last things he says in the featurette is that it always amazes George how they can be such fans that they obsess over making these little details the same as they were the first time they saw them.
Mm-hmm.
And it is, you have to think that it's probably, I'm sure at this point it's just sort of old hat, but you have to think that for a while, possibly for a long time, and maybe even occasionally now, it's got to be an odd feeling for George Lucas to have these things that he imagined and many of these details that he probably never cared about become so important to fans of his work. And, you know, I can only imagine he's like, you're obsessing over the Jurek. You're missing the point of Star Wars. And yet, you know, to some extent, preserving that authenticity is part of what makes Star Wars fun as a fan. And having those kind of, you know, the timeless nature of stop motion just being a jerky animation style. It being kind of a silly thing, but it making it feel more real because it looks more fake.
Yep. It's kind of like how they use like physical sets and props and stuff in Star Wars. Not because it necessarily looks better than CGI, but because it looks more like Star Wars than CGI.
That's why Grogu had to be a physical prop.
Yep. And it makes a huge difference.
Yeah. He feels more real as a character.
Or why in Rogue One, all of the actors had to have 70s and 80s haircuts in it. Because there was like, that's the time when Star Wars was filmed. If you want to feel like Star Wars, that's how they need to look. So they do. So they get into the reason why Cut deserted, you know, I say in air quotes, and he says, look, it was the first battle of the Geonosis. My transport was shot down. The droids came up and were executing the survivors at the crash site. And he's like, there was no chance. He's like, everyone was either dead or injured. They were being executed on the ground. There was no chance for me to do anything. So I ran. And he's like, that experience still haunts me to this day. Which I thought was a really, really good way to handle it. Now, the fact that he deserted after the Battle of the Geonosis, which is like 2 years before this, means that there are two possibilities for how him and Sue have these kids. The first possibility, which I think is correct, is that she already had these kids and he's their adopted father.
Yeah.
Right? Because they're both Twi'lek children. So she already had the kids. They meet. They fall in love. He's their adopted father. The second, and significantly less likely, but a theory that is supported by the extended universe is that they're actually his kids And they inherited the rapid aging gene from the clone. And that's how they've grown up, because obviously they're much older than 2 years old.
Right.
So I think it's more likely that he's just their adopted father. I don't know that there's necessarily an official, like, you know, an official thing. I think we can probably figure out the official thing, because Cut and Run is an episode of The Bad Batch, right? Which takes place, I think, 2 years after this. And I don't believe the kids have, like, rapidly aged again in another 2 years. Like, I think they're about the same age as they would be, or a couple years older than they would be. So my expectation is just that he is their adopted father.
And yet, if you really wanted to, like, die on the hill of the gene being heritable for the rapid development, you could say, well, you know, they only got some of those traits, right?
They only got a quarter of it.
Yeah, that development is really complicated. It's probably more than one gene. And so they only got some of those genes. And it's, you know, it's there's the whole human Twi'lek interspecies children. So genetics in Star Wars just, it works however the plot demands that it works at the time.
And this whole thing is a main plot point in the Clone Commandos novels by Karen Travis.
Interesting.
So they have, number one, they have a clone who marries a Twi'lek. And number two, they have a clone who has a kid with a Jedi. And they're not sure whether or not the kid inherited the gene that's going to make him age more quickly. And the entire point of the Clone Commandos novel is that one of the trainers at Kamino, who is training these kids to be soldiers as an ex-bounty hunter, like, ends up loving the kids like they're his own kids and makes it his mission to figure out a way to stop their rapid aging so that they can have a normal life. Like, that's the whole point of the Clone Commandos novels. That's what they're chasing after the whole time.
Interesting.
And of course, it never got finished because Karen Travis got very angry that they were going a different direction with the Clone Wars. It was actually like the Clone Wars TV series that upset her. Her books were very like, the Republic is bad, the Jedi are bad, and the clones are the victims here. And she didn't like that the Clone Wars series was going in a direction where, like, the clones and the Jedi were kind of like buddies and friendly with each other, because they had a very antagonistic relationship in her novels. And the Jedi were, like, openly, like, not really good, with the exception of a handful of them. So she didn't like that the Clone Wars is going, like, a very different way from her novels. And so she got into a disagreement with a Star Wars story group and basically was like, all right, I'm done. I'm not writing any more of these novels. And she, like, checked out. And unfortunately, she had written, I think, 4 novels. And, like, just so it literally ends on a cliffhanger. Like, I think I've told you about this before, but, like, I didn't know that that happened. I thought they had finished it.
Right.
So I, like, read through the entire series, got to the end of the last book, which was not supposed to be the last book. It ends on a cliffhanger. And I, like, went to go buy the next book to read it, and it just doesn't exist. And I was like, you've got to be kidding me, man. I've invested, like, hours and hours and hours in this freaking series to have it end on a cliffhanger. So I ended up having to go to the author's website, and she was like, even though I'm not writing the books anymore, here's my outline for the final book, and here's what would have happened, which is a totally unsatisfactory way to end a series.
Yeah.
It was very disappointing.
Oh, that's brutal. I mean, so, you know, so really, you know, she took a moral stance on the whole clone question, if you will. You know, I think that's fine to do. Obviously, it wasn't quite the stance maybe that, you know, or she took it a little more strongly than maybe the story group wanted her to. I don't know exactly what the details were there. But anyways, there are definitely a lot of complicated moral questions to ask when it comes to the clone army. And I think it's almost unquestionable that building an army of clones and forcing them to fight a war for you is wrong. Like, this is unquestionably an evil thing to do. And yet you also have to look at, like, the greater stakes, and from the Jedi's perspective, they didn't have anything to do with creating this army, but this army is here. And also, the Separatists have an army of droids and are waging war. And so what are they supposed to do?
Mm-hmm.
I think what they were supposed to do was something else, but they were blinded by the dark side. And so they embraced the clone army, and here we are. And You know, Cut is, you know, I think, again, over the game of Djarik, you know, he is explaining to Rex, you know, you call me a deserter and a coward, and, you know, one of those things is true. You know, I did leave the army, but I left because everyone I knew and cared about was dead. And there was nothing for me there, right? You know, I cared about my brothers, and they were murdered by these droids in our first battle. And, it, you know, it sort of upended Cut's whole belief system. And I think it's, you know, it does come down to kind of what he said is we're all individuals and we may be genetically identical. And we may have been trained identically and brought up identically, but experience distinguishes us. And, you know, this was my experience. Can you blame me? And I think Rex comes away from it kind of acknowledging that he can't really blame him, but that his experience was different, right? He has been in a lot of battles, lost a lot of brothers, but his family is still out there, and the army is his family, and that's what he's fighting to defend. And I appreciate, you know, Cut kind of takes Rex on a journey here, where Rex has just been following orders and doing what he's doing and not really thinking about it too deeply. And Cut kind of forces him to think about it and to say, you know, I see how a decision could be made that's different from the one that I'm making. But that's not the decision that's right for me. I still have people that I'm fighting for. And so I'm going to keep fighting. And mm-hmm. I appreciate that. You know, there's some emotional nuance that happens here with the clones that we just definitely do not get in the other half of the episode. And it doesn't, it's subtle. You know, it doesn't hit you over the head. It's not a tearjerker. But, you know, here in the Kutch household, we stand for Rex. And so, mm-hmm. you know, I got to say that brings the points up for this episode for sure. And so then we get the final, the real climax to the episode, not Grievous escaping, but the kids stumbling across a crashed escape pod, finding it. This escape pod, though, this was the Commando droid's private escape pod, and it is packed with mm-hmm. Commando droids. Luckily, many of them have been somewhat damaged, so they're not at full strength. But the kids accidentally activate, you know, a full platoon of functional Commando droids. And they flee screaming once they see these droids start getting up. The droids promptly attack the farmhouse. The kids have given them just enough warning to set up sort of a defensible plan. Cut's got his blaster rifle. He's set up, you know, to watch the downstairs. Rex is upstairs as like a last line of defense between the droids and Cut's family. And it's a heck of a fight. It feels very tense. You know they're not going to be killing kids on screen in an animated show, but Sue feels like she could be in danger.
Mm-hmm.
They'll definitely kill adult and Cut for sure. I definitely thought Cut was going to die the first time I watched this. I thought Cut was going to die and Rex was going to feel like a jerk.
Forever having doubted his bravery, yeah. Right? So
yeah, you know, and that was going to be like Cut's redemption in Rex's eyes. And also like sort of this dark message that no matter what the clones do, they can't escape the war. But that's not how it plays out. Once again, they say, hey, we've got an interesting character. We're going to let you think that they're going to die, and then we're not going to kill them so we can use them later. And Cut actually does get some good, interesting story down the road, which I'm really glad that they saved him. I think he's a great character.
Yep. And there's the final line of the episode is, you know, Rex is preparing to leave and Sue is like, are you going to report my husband? And he's like, well, you know, it is my duty to report a deserter. But he's like, you know, because of my injury, he's like, I probably won't remember any of this,
yeah.
is what he says. You know, kind of just saying like, hey, I'm just going to turn a blind eye to it. Cut's like, you know, you can stay with us. You don't have to go back to the war. And he says, this is your home, Cut. My family is elsewhere.
Yeah.
Right. And so I thought that was a really good way to end it. So like half of this episode to me is a 10 because I'm always, always, always looking for like that emotional weight to an episode. And I love the moral quandary that is dealing with the clones and their place in all of this.
Yeah.
The other half, the Grievous stuff, is just so boilerplate typical. It was like they needed to fill out the other half of the story. The story they really wanted to tell was Cut's story, but they had to finish off the Grievous thing, so they do, and it does, it happens. And like that part drags the episode down by, I don't know, at least a full point to me. But man, I just like the clone deserter stuff so much.
Yeah.
That, you know, that raises the episode back up.
Yeah, this is a hard one for me to rate because I just was not at all like interested in this part of the Grievous story because it, again, it was a foretold, you know, foregone conclusion. Mm-hmm. There's no tension. There's no real excitement. We know how it's all going to play out. It's not like a spectacular or unique encounter in any way. It's just more of the same. And it really kind of blends into the background. To be honest, I think I forgot that this like I remember the clone part of the story. Right? I remember Cut and I remember Rex and that part of the story. I completely forgot that it was attached to Grievous in any meaningful way.
Right.
He's just an excuse for them to have to fight commando droids together, really. And it's just unfortunate they had to spend so much of the episode focused on Kenobi and Grievous. Yeah, I don't know. My gut is to give this one an 8. It's a really solid episode, but it's heavily dragged down by large portions of the story just not being interesting.
So I agree with you on the 8, and the reason being is because the Cut stuff is a 10, and the Grievous stuff is like a 6.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, half the episode is the Grievous stuff.
It is.
So to me, it's like, if we give the first episode a 7.5, the second episode an 8, like that feels pretty, you know, pretty standard. Like I feel like the first episode is like literally a like boilerplate average Clone Wars episode. It was very funny to me how much Dave Filoni enjoyed the first episode. Like I would have really thought that he would have enjoyed like other episodes way more, but it was like boilerplate average Clone Wars is Grievous Intrigue. This one is like not great Clone Wars with very good Clone Wars in the same episode, which is such an odd mixing.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I think I'm going to give it an 8 as well. Like I want to give it higher, but I literally just can't, because if the entire episode was the clone deserter stuff, I could easily give it higher.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. I mean, depending on how it all played out, I think it could be a contender for a 10. If it was just a full episode focused on that storyline and they were able to really dive into it and spend twice the time digging into it and poking at the moral questions there, absolutely a contender for one of the best episodes. But unfortunately, that's just not how it played out. So do we have any fun trivia here that we've skipped over? I think we got most of it. Yeah.
Yeah. No, that's pretty much it for these episodes. Next week, we've just got a single episode to talk about, which is Lightsaber Lost. Which I actually thought potentially Lightsaber Lost was like the hidden third part of these two episodes, because we see Tara Sunub or Sunube with Ahsoka in Grievous Intrigue. They're standing in the like Jedi Council war room when they're talking about it. But no, I watched the episode just to see, because I thought maybe it was like, you know, the second Battle of Geonosis arc where I didn't realize that Senate Spy was the beginning of that. But no, it's totally on its own. Just completely stands on its own. Another thing that I also didn't know is that in Lightsaber Lost, there's a Tirellian Jango jumper. And I always was like, why does her face look so weird? And it's because it's a freaking mask, which I've now watched this episode like 3 times and just realized last night that it's because she's wearing a mask. And that's like not actually what her face looks like. So that'll be an interesting thing to talk about. That episode is like...
That's funny.
It's definitely an episode. I like it because it's like an Ahsoka forward episode, but it is like not one of my favorite episodes of the series. But Tara Sunube is pretty cool. So we'll talk about that next week, but that's going to be a short one because it's just the one. But then after that, we've got a 3-part episode, which is the first of our Mandalore plots, which is phenomenal. An excellent, excellent arc. I haven't rewatched it yet for this watch through. But if I recall from the first couple watch throughs, I remember very, very much liking this first Mandalore arc. So,
well, we'll see if you're looking at it through rose tinted glasses or not here in the very near future. With just one episode to talk about next week, I think that gives us lots of time to rewatch those Mandalore ones, maybe more than once before then. And I think that brings us to the end of Grievous Entry and The Deserter.
Yes, it does. So we'll see you next week, guys.
Okay. Well, until then, may the Force be with you.
And also with you.